What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict, tanks, weapon systems, escalation. Jan Stoltenberg, the General Secretary of NATO, assures the European audience that we're looking at a decisive phase for the Ukraine conflict, but that nuclear weapons are not on the table. And NATO giving Ukraine what it needs to defend itself and shed itself of the Russian invasion is not going to trigger a nuclear exchange, says NATO. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News. He's a visiting professor at Dickinson College, as well as the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, to help me understand some of these events moving very quickly now. We start with tanks, main battle tanks, Challenger 2 in Britain, Leopard 2 in Germany, Abrams in the U.S. The question is, are the main battle tanks headed to Ukraine? In what time order? And will it manage the battlefield in Donbass differently than we see now, which is stalemate-like trench warfare artillery exchange? Jeff, a very good evening to you. First, remarks by Ben Wallace in London, the defense minister for the United Kingdom, criticizing Germany for reluctance about the Leopard 2. At the same time, we have a new minister of defense in Germany saying that the Leopard 2 is headed to Ukraine and that we're going to go along with this as quickly as we can. We also have Abrams in the U.S., and there is some question now about, are these packages tied together? For example, there's a headline in the Telegraph in London. Germany won't act alone in sending tanks to Ukraine, says Olaf Scholz, the chancellor. Okay. Do these main battle tanks change the nature of the front line in Donbass? And what is the timeline for them to reach that front line? Good evening to you, Jeff.
Good evening to you, John. Potentially, they change that front line in the Donbass, but it's going to take some time. Time to train properly Ukrainian crews, not only to operate these particular sophisticated military pieces of equipment, but maintain them. And also, we're talking about numbers. The British have announced the delivery of one squadron, 14 Challenger 2 tanks, about a company's worth. Not terribly military significant, but of great political significance in terms of breaking that logjam up and providing heavy armored vehicles to the Ukraine. And for this may suffice to allow Mr. Scholz to realize he doesn't have to go first, that that particular dam has been broken. And of course, key in delivering the Leo 2 is the Poles have already indicated their willingness to provide Leopard 2 to Ukraine. But those Leos they have were purchased from Germany. So Germany has to agree to the transfer of Polish Leopard 2 tanks as well as German Leo tanks. But it'll still take time to train crews and also the overall numbers. The Ukrainians say for an effective counteroffensive, they will need up to 300 main battle tanks. And the total I've seen so far from Poland, Germany, Great Britain don't even amount to 100. There is some question whether the United States might provide the M1 Abrams as well. That remains to be seen. We may hear more about that, John, later this week. A very important meeting, I think, in Ramstein coming up of the contact group to discuss providing Ukraine additional military hardware. It seems to me the desire right now, as we are in January, is to provide that armor quickly. So over the next few weeks, we can see crews being trained probably in Germany and Poland, to be available then to conduct a counteroffensive sometime end of March, early part of April.
About the offensive, talk, it's only talk, but it's been going on for weeks now, that the Russians are preparing for an offensive sometime this winter with the frozen ground. Is that something that these tanks could blunt? What you're indicating is that they won't be there before springtime.
Well, it's a real possibility that the Russians are preparing some kind of a counteroffensive. But I think they, too, are on a longer timeline because so far we've seen them mobilize additional manpower, but not have the ability to train that manpower or even to equip individual soldiers with the basic items of equipment an individual soldier needs, a helmet, a flak jacket, a sleeping bag, a pair of boots, and a serviceable individual weapon, let alone replace. And, you know, the chief of the general staff in Great Britain also spoke to the House of Parliament the other day, and he claims, based on their intelligence, the Russians have lost over 1,200 tanks in the fighting so far. So Russian industry's ability to replace that. We see the Russians also decreasing in their daily rate of fire of artillery ammo, indicating that the Russian industrial base is having a problem maintaining that capacity. And we continue to hear stories about the Russians as well, trying to purchase additional artillery ammo and other items from as far away as North Korea. So for both sides, Ukraine and Russia, while interested in a counteroffensive to break the deadlock they're in right now, it remains unclear to me who has the manpower and materiel and how quickly they can train it, organize it, equip it to conduct that offensive they wish to do.
The Wagner Group. The question here is it an army within an army? It gets a lot of attention in the media, especially in Europe, but I can't measure whether it's a significant battle force in a stalemate. How to regard this news, Jeff? Is it propaganda out of Moscow or is it genuine anxiety at NATO?
I think it's more propaganda, John. I think it's also personal aggrandizement. Mr. Prigozhin has been trying to, if you will, tout the ability of the Wagner Group because he sees that as his ability to make him more self, more prominent, and perhaps take on a greater political role across Russia. That's his personal agenda with the Wagner Group. But in around Bakhmut, there are reports I've just finished reading that the Wagner Group may have suffered as many as 15,000 casualties, dead, wounded, missing, captured, over the last few weeks, about one-third of their total force. And furthermore, it's my read that the announcement of placing General Gerasimov, chief of the general staff, overall in command of Russian operations in Ukraine, replacing General Sorovikin, who will be maintained as a deputy, is a desire to take greater control by the Russian general staff over military operations and dampen down the role of the Wagner Group.
What we're looking at here is a stalemate from 20,000 miles away, 50, 40, 25,000 miles away, a stalemate in wintertime, trench warfare, artillery exchanges, although, as you indicate, the pace is slackening. We also have questions about what comes next. But, Jeff, a stalemate can go on for years. That was the Western Front. Is that what we're looking at?
Potentially, John, but I think, again, this whole question of increased materiel, increased manpower, there are some suggestions that the Russians will do a second mobilization. And they have formally announced that between now and 2026, they plan to dramatically increase the size of the Russian army to well over 1.5 million men. And so far, at least as well, the stalemate has been to some degree, I think, due to unseasonably warm weather in Europe and in Ukraine, which has kept the ground not totally frozen, which has hindered heavy armored operations. So though there's a possibility of getting into that kind of a frozen conflict, as you describe, it clearly seems to me that both the Ukrainians as well as the Russians know that time is not on their side. Ukraine is dependent on Western support, which will not go on indefinitely. And I think they fully realize that. The Russians as well realize they've got real challenges of their industrial base. We're not prepared for the long war. And many of the things I think Mr. Putin is doing right now in terms of placing Gerasimov in charge, a lot of announcements of putting the industry in Russia on a war footing are intended now for the longer war that they're going to have to conduct.
And finally, about those main battle tanks, is there comparable weaponry on the Russian side that there was on the Ukraine side when they took down all those tanks early in the war? Those shoulder-fired missiles that hit the tank from the top where the armor is thinnest. Are we vulnerable to that as well, a Challenger 2, Leopard 2, and Abrams 1?
Sure. All those tanks are particularly vulnerable from the top shots because of thinner armor on the turret on top. And the Russians have their own shoulder-fired anti-tank weapons. That being said, the Leo, the Challenger 2, certainly the Abrams, are much better main battle tanks than the T-80s and T-90s, in some cases T-72s, that the Russians have been fielding. finally, the way the turret is constructed on those particular weapons and how ammo is stored, you won't see those tanks as frequently suffer the catastrophic destruction we saw on Russian tanks, which, because of a fewer crews, have an automatic loader, which means basically the turret is like a cylinder with shells all around it on the inside. So when hit by that particular anti-tank rocket, you get secondary explosions and the entire destruction of the crew. Those American Western tanks have the ammunition in the turret in the back with blast shields, so it's designed, if hit, will blow outward and not necessarily kill the entire crew in the process.
That's a good innovation. The Russians are unwise not to use it. Jeff, finally, we've watched the stepping up the arsenal that flows to Ukraine for the last 11 months now. We're coming to 11 months into the war. Is there another weapon system in the arsenal of democracy that would make sense in Ukraine? On the battlefield, we've talked about HIMARS and long-range artillery pieces, now main battle tanks, and lots of armored vehicles. But what is next, Jeff?
Well, there are three things I can think of. And one is, of course, improved air defense capabilities. One Patriot, the battery, will take care of one city and would have done little to stop the attack that occurred recently of an old cruise missile that hit Dnipro and killed 40 civilians. So expanded air defense, longer range, accurate artillery and rocket fire, the ATACMs, that could perhaps then take out Russian supplies and even some of the bases Russia is using to launch those long-range attacks on Ukraine. But that would mean, of course, striking Russian territory, which we have been somewhat reluctant to provide them such weapons for fear of escalation. And the final thing that would be of great use, of course, would be advanced aircraft, fighter aircraft that could be used in close support of Ukrainians in the advance or could be used to maintain the air cap over Ukraine. Whether those were older Soviet weapons, aircraft that we could get from Eastern Europeans. Some people have talked about, for example, the A-10, referred to as the Warthog, which the United States Air Force is now getting ready to put onto obsolescence. But as a close support anti-armor weapon, has enormous capability, which I witnessed during the Gulf War, and I'm confident the Ukrainians would be delighted to get a bunch of A-10 aircraft.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News. Visiting professor at Dickinson College, as well as CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. When we come back, Japan. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it. And they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.